All right. Good afternoon. How's everybody doing this afternoon? Day two of the conference. Good? Okay, excellent. I just want to start out by thanking everybody for coming to the conference. You know, we put a lot of effort as a team into this thing, and then you like cross your fingers and hope that everybody will come. So it's so nice to see everyone show up and have a good time. Let me tell you what I'm going to do in this session, and then I will not at all be offended if you decide that's not what I want to hear, and you get up and leave. And I won't be offended if you leave in the middle either. I want to split it into three sections. Number one, I wanted to take a step back a little bit and talk about our philosophy when it comes to social and the future of work. I'll use a video that some of you may have seen. I'll use some discussion. I'll use a couple of slides in that section. My objective in that section is to give you a little bit more context than you got from us yesterday, maybe even a little bit more context than what you've had from some of the other sessions on, you know, how are we thinking about transforming this work thing and what were some of the underlying philosophical beliefs that we have. The second thing that I'm going to do is a little bit different than even the track would indicate, and that is I actually want to spend some time talking about our strategy. I'll do both product strategy and I'll do business strategy. And this is kind of an approach that I take usually in what we call our executive briefing center. You may hear this referred to as the EBC. When I have an opportunity to kind of go deep with executives and say, hey, for you to make good decisions, I want you to have some color into how we're thinking about product strategy and how we're thinking about business strategy, because that's going to really help inform where you head. And generally, that's a really good discussion. And then the third thing I want to do is open up to an extended Q&A. I actually wanted to have just a total open mic session at some point, and I think my team, not this team, but the bigger team nixed me on that, so I'm going to like totally hijack this session and have a open mic a little bit. If you don't have questions, that's fine too, but I'd love to answer questions about our enterprise social strategy, about what we're seeing from customers in terms of adoption. I'm also happy to go way beyond social to kind of the broader themes. I've had people ask me, where's SharePoint headed? What are you going to do with the brand? How do you, like, anything's fair game. I'm really happy to answer those questions because at the end of the day, they all come back together. If we don't have enough questions, again, I won't be offended at all. I'll go have a drink and so will you and we'll do something else. Which is totally fine. So we can make it work no matter kind of how many questions you have. So with that, let me launch into this video and tee up the video that I want to show you. This is a video that my team put together. I really love the video because when we started to work on how we would tell you about the future of work, what we really struggled with is that we recognized that it was going to be hard to just talk about it. It was going to be really hard to say, well, this is what we want you to do. Yesterday, I hope you liked the demos that you saw with things like Oslo and the Office Graph and groups. That is another step in the process. But still, it's not quite enough, I feel like, because we actually have a vision for how we think companies need to operate, how they actually need to change the way they get things done to be more competitive. So the video today is going to do exactly that. And the pitch that many of you will hear from us over, you know, hopefully you've already heard it a little bit, but that many of you will hear over the course of the next coming months is what we really started to recognize is that in many ways we feel like the industry has gotten it wrong up to this point. What I mean by that is when they've looked at what has happened out in our personal lives, the focus has been on experience. Oh, this website, the experience is really good. Or this app, the experience is really good. And we think that the experience that people are having in their consumer lives is only half of the equation. That the other half is that these new apps and services have literally made it easier for people to organize themselves and to get information from each other. The example I often give is like when I walk into Best Buy these days, I am much more educated about the products I want to buy than the kid who's trying to sell me the product. Like, so much so that it gets frustrating after about two questions, right? Like, I know about the tablet or the printer, and the poor kid, you know, he doesn't have any information, obviously, given to by the big box provider. And I have checked the reviews, so I understand what people have done. I've read up on it. I've done a lot of work pulling on, quote unquote, my network. So when you hear us say, hey, you should work like a network, what we mean is, in our personal lives, we can. We can pull on information from people and get stuff done. But then we walk into our companies and, like, it doesn't work that way. So let me show you this video. It's just a very quick kind of overview. Some of you may have seen it because we showed it at the ExecTrack kickoff. But even if you did, it's worthwhile to do it as a backdrop so I can go into a little bit more detail here.
Thank you. Today, people are more connected than ever before, through social networks, through the cloud, through mobile devices. The world has become a giant network. And every second, people are sharing, learning, and making decisions on the go. They're all part of one hyper-connected world. These are your customers. They expect faster responses, personalized service, better experiences. As a business, you have to always be listening to your customers. Anticipate trends. Take action. And adapt quickly, no matter what comes your way, so you can always stay one step ahead. You need the latest information at your fingertips to make fully informed decisions. And as a business, you can give your customers exactly what they want, when they want it. So they walk away with experiences as unique as they are. What if you were connected to everything important? What if you and every person in your company could work together like a network? Suddenly, you're plugged into everything that matters to your business. You're social and collaborating in new ways, exchanging ideas with people across the globe. You're always listening to your employees, customers, and partners. You spot new opportunities to adapt quickly and make change happen. You share documents and information in real time and make decisions faster than ever. When you're working together as one connected network, you can grow your business. You understand your customers, you build better products, and you deliver the best experiences. This is the power of a network. Now's the time to start working like one.
All right, so first I should ask you, does that help you visualize kind of how we're thinking about things? You can say no. Does it work for you? Good, I hope so. For me, as I think about kind of what we're trying to do and what we were showing yesterday, we are really trying to help people to be able to work in a different way. We're really trying to bring together a whole bunch of things that exist today but are not tied together very well so that people can work like they do outside of work. That is our vision, and that is what we're trying to do. Now, let me, before I go deep into kind of a couple of other things, let me talk to you a little bit about benefits and approach. I'm going to fast forward through a bunch of slides that you may see. I'm not going to actually present these to you. This is our, the world will become a network. We do believe that as I have done a lot of work with executives and companies, that there is this idea that customers expect more. And the place that I would focus your attention here is that we think it takes a network to serve a network. And by that we mean it takes a network of employees and partners and others to serve a network of customers. So you kind of have to have what we would call like an impedance match as opposed to an impedance mismatch going on. And lots of reasons. I'm not going to try and pitch it to you. But I want to move into kind of the benefits that I think are really important because this is going to lay the foundation for our strategy. And as we think about the benefits of what we will try to talk about, as a result, companies are being disrupted. I'll tell a story or two. There are essentially kind of three big benefits that we're trying to drive, of helping you to listen to what's happening, both inside and outside your organization, helping you then to adapt faster than ever before, so turn things around quickly, and then helping you to focus on execution once you know what you want to do, so going to grow your business. This is a different approach than we've ever taken before. We've been very tool-centric in what we've done, and this idea of listening, adapting, and growing is this is not just marketing. This is the way that we're thinking about how things work and how we want them to work. There are a bunch of stories that Adam Pisoni tells about this that some of you may have heard, a lot of different ways to think about how this can be useful. I'll relate one because I want to make sure that we can get grounded and do something a little bit different than his presentation. But one that I like is Qantas Airlines. Qantas Airlines, of course, is an organization that has most of its folks not behind a desk, and we actually see that more and more as we start to focus on changing the world. And one of the things that happened with them is they started to use Yammer. They didn't know they were quote-unquote working like a network. They start to use Yammer to try and shorten the distance between the front lines of serving the customer and kind of the back end of the company where people were getting work done and making decisions. And they had a very simple thing happen that I thought was very enlightening. And that was, one day, a flight crew was on a flight. It was one of those long-haul flights. They were serving someone in first class. And a couple of people, in particular one, had some comments, some feedback, let's say, on one of the menu items. And this was not the first time that the flight crew had heard the comment or feedback on the menu item. So they decided, you know, what the heck? I'll give it a try. And they decided to post kind of what they had heard. Well, in the simple post, the chef, who was back at headquarters, who was responsible for the menu items and the recipes, actually picked up on that and said, oh, that's interesting. We can actually make a very simple change to how we're preparing the food, and we can get over that. And within 3 days of actually first having the feedback shared, they had made the change, and 3 days later, the flights were having something different happen with their menu. Now, that is not, you know, that's not solving cancer. That's not an example meant to say, hey, you can change everything. But it does give you a sense of what it means to start to work like a network, how you can listen to the conversations that matter, how they can adapt what you're doing, and then go back out to make a difference in how you're executing your business. So we have lots and lots of examples. If we have some time, I'd be happy to tell you some more. For me, there is really something very fundamental happening here that matters. As we think about trying to do this, you saw some of the things we shared in the keynote. Now it kind of gets to the part where I light up, because I'd like to tell you about our strategy. What are we doing? If this is kind of our philosophy, how are we approaching this? And we have a two-pronged strategy. Number one, we really feel strongly that the tool set that's available out there is not yet mature enough in order to support this type of work. And so we're going to go change that. We showed you some of those things at the keynote yesterday. I want to go deep. I actually want to show you, okay, what was the thinking behind this and where are we taking it all? So I'm actually going to whiteboard up here. I'm going to draw some stuff. The second thing that we're doing, though, is we also recognize that we have to help companies in their journey. And so I have a great team of people. It's the first time we've ever done this at Microsoft, spread throughout the world, of what we call customer success managers. And this group is super focused on helping our customers be successful, just like the name implies, it turns out. And the idea here is that technology is not going to be enough, that you have to take a step back and really focus on how you're getting your work done. These folks don't carry quota. They're not meant to sell anything. They're also not marketers. They're not product people. They're like a brand new thing that we're doing. And I'm really excited about that. I'm going to tell you about that as we go. So let me switch over now from this. We may end up coming back to it, but I want to draw for you and talk about kind of how we're bringing all of this together. And this is the piece where if this is not your cup of tea, you absolutely can. Oh, that's my family. I didn't mean for that to come up, but they're beautiful. Look at that. But I'm going to talk to you about kind of how things have evolved a little bit. And you can ask questions as we go. You can also ask questions at the end. In order to really change the way people worked, you know, we started this journey several years ago, many years ago. I think Jeff talked about 8 years ago when we first started what was called Business Productivity Online Services. BPOS is the way we refer to it. It's the very first time we hosted something for people. And the thing that we hosted was mail. And I'm going to draw just a simple view of that because I want to build on it. The idea behind it back in the day was we had a simple kind of client-server architecture. The server was Exchange. The front, of course, was Outlook. And the very first thing we ever did was to try and bring what was server client into a data center and host it for our customers. This was the first step that we ever did. The link between server clients, pretty straightforward. We had a back end that managed mailboxes. Exchange got better over time. It turns out it was asked by our earliest adopters, but it turns out that was incredibly painful for us. Because up to that point, we had simply produced the software and handed it over to you to run. And you know, we could stand here, we could, you know, make all sorts of statements about, like, I don't know why this is so hard for you guys, like read the TechNet article and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, we had to run it, and not just run it, but start to run it at scale. And let me tell you, that was a pain in the neck. We learned a lot there and recognized, man, this is harder than we thought it was. So it was we had always done some dog food stuff, but this was an experience where we were very focused on making it work. Now that progressed for some time, and as Jeff indicated, people then started to say, hey, I like, you know, getting my mail delivered this way, but I'd also like you to do the other stuff for us. You know, so we started to add some other stuff. The next thing that we took a look at was SharePoint with kind of its web client. I'm just going to represent that way. And yet, here was another service that we added to kind of what we had to offer. And on we went with our grand strategy and decided, wow, you know what? We could probably call this thing Office, maybe even Office 365. And we could have a link service with the front-end link client. We then went out and did an acquisition of Yammer. And we had all these services, and we were excited about going from business productivity online services to what we then branded as Office 365. And the first time we did Office 365, here's what you got. My first experiences with Office 365 were an absolute nightmare. I don't know who touched it in the beginning of this group, but when you switched from application to application in those early days, you actually had to log on again first, and then the entire user experience was different. I would go from an experience in Outlook to a web experience in SharePoint. Nothing worked, you know, nothing felt like it went together. And so as a part of this chapter, we started to do some underlying work. One piece of underlying work we did was we went underneath all of these and we started to build up kind of some shared admin capabilities. We also started to do a bit of identity so you didn't have to log in. And then we started to do up top here some look and feel. So we started to actually get kind of a consistent look and feel to Office 365. Now, for those of you who kind of started to interact with Microsoft, let's say a year and a half to 2 years ago, that was the journey that we were on. That was what you heard from us. That's what we talked about in our keynote. It felt very jarring. You were running on-prem with incredible applications that you had built that were customized to what you wanted to do, and we were talking about a cloud that kind of had come to this stage in its progression. And that, in many ways, kind of felt daunting and overwhelming and didn't quite feel right. We recognized that. So we started to look at this combination of things and recognize, wow, there's a lot we could do with this, but what do we really want to do? Is our business essentially going to be an outsourcing business, and so we want to run it more efficiently? The answer to that is yes, but that didn't seem like enough. Is our business that we want to make each one of these things better on its own? And the answer to that, again, was yes, but it didn't seem to be enough. And so the journey that Jeff described yesterday is we really took a long, hard look at this, let's say roughly about kind of 12 to 18 months ago. Finishing up the last SharePoint conference, that next 6 months was the time when we were really internally powwowing. And that happened to be just the time when we had made the Yammer acquisition, which was fascinating. They brought in a lot of ideas about how to do things. So we took a look at this portfolio of things and we said, gee whiz, you know, what we really want to do is we really want to help people to work differently, the vision that I showed you through the video. But this set of things doesn't enable that. It's not there yet. We need to think harder about where to go from here. So now I'm going to go into kind of the next chapter and the thinking behind what you saw yesterday, some of which we kind of explicitly talked about, some things we were implicit about, to give you a sense for where we're going. Like, how is this all going to play out at the product level? First, I'm going to start down below all of this under admin. There had been some good work done on things like basic identity. So I didn't have to sign in again to each application. That was good. There were some things that were done around admin. So there started to be a one way to administer many of these things. When we think about working differently, working like a network in the future, one of the first things, though, that we think we need to do is to make kind of people, I would say, a first-class object, but what I mean by that is people core to the system. Let me give you an example of how that's not true today. Between Yammer and the rest of the suite, there are still two identities, two profiles that exist. Even within that profile system between Exchange and SharePoint, we don't make people important in the way you work. They happen to be a byproduct, and the best we do right now, if you're familiar with our suite, is kind of a card. It represents you as a person, has a little bit of your org chart on it, you know, has your phone number, et cetera. But boy, in an era when we're 2014, 2015, that doesn't feel like enough. This is the era where people have become absolutely first-class citizens on the internet, and we felt like we needed to do more. So there is a lot of work happening right now around this idea of people, not only around identity, which we think is very, very important, and it is too hard today for anyone who's out there doing Office 365 today, you know that identity tends to be one of the harder things to do, to go in and work through Active Directory and those types of things, but also around profiles and who you are. The examples I'll give you is your representation of you outside of work still is very rich. In fact, it's much richer than it is inside of work. Think about your LinkedIn profile if you've looked for a job recently. That is as important, if not more important, than your resume these days. It tells a lot about you and who you are and what you do. That idea of persona and person has not made it into the workplace, not in a way that we feel like it has the kind of gravity that it needs to have in the future. So we're doing a lot of work down here at the bottom on people. There's a lot of stuff we didn't tell you about. I'm not going to let any cats out of any bags right at this moment, except to say that this is a place that we think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity to go and get people right within an organization. So lots of stuff happening here around identity, lots of stuff happening around profiles, lots of inspiration from outside of the company in terms of how we might do this. The second thing that we did, we did talk about a little bit, but I want to give you a little bit more conceptual grounding. And hopefully I can give you a view of this that will be a little bit different even from some of the sessions that you saw. And I'm going to label this one Office Graph. Now, there were sessions on Office Graph, and I've worked very closely with that team, but I want to kind of put Office Graph in context of what we were trying to do. For us, when we looked at this configuration and the journey we had been on, it was clear that we had created, you know, we had reinforced silos that had grown up through history of Outlook and Exchange and SharePoint and its back end and Link and its back end and Yammer and its back end. And when we took feedback from customers, we clearly heard that they wanted more integration, but most of the time, the direct feedback I would hear from you, from customer organizations, was much more about the integration on the front end. It would sound something like this. Hey, I want Yammer feeds in SharePoint. Or I'd like to see Link integrated with Yammer. Or I'd like to understand how SharePoint and Outlook could be linked together more tightly. That was the level at which we were getting a lot of. And it totally makes sense. That was the experience that people were having. But when we looked at trying to bring these things together, we started to recognize, gee whiz, there isn't even a common way of thinking about the objects, the things, the people across all of these things. A person felt different in each place. The things that mattered to them felt different. Exchange and Outlook actually treated kind of documents differently than SharePoint did, right? Like you put an attachment on, it goes into some Exchange store right now. That is neither managed nor versioned nor anything. Like, you don't know what's going on with it. Whereas SharePoint takes a totally different approach to documents. So we started to feel like, wow, this doesn't feel right. We need in many ways to create a way of thinking about the things that matter most across what we would call these workloads. That's where actually the Office Graph came from. The thinking that we did was, how do you do that? And you can imagine the internal discussions we had of like, well, maybe you need some sort of information bus. That would have been 1990s type of architecture. Maybe you need to think about maybe just a data model that everything's an object, and so there are these kind of properties of the object. You can imagine that. But the inspiration that we drew on the most kind of came from two sources. One was from the enterprise graph that Yammer had really kind of latched onto early on. We'll talk about that in a moment. And then the other was some work that Fast had done in all places, Oslo. And we'll talk more about the Oslo thing in a moment. Both those teams actually came at it from different directions. The Yammer team's inspiration was essentially what they were seeing happen with consumer social, where they realized, gee whiz, when you look at Facebook and you looked at LinkedIn as maybe two great examples, the power of what was happening there was the network, the graph that they were creating. In fact, if you go look at kind of some of Facebook's public statements about what they consider to be their most important asset, they will say that it's the graph of relationships between you and your friends and family. They will also say that they've been very careful in how they think about that. Every feature they create is meant to do either one of two things, either push information into the graph or to intelligently surface information back out of the graph. They literally will have this mindset of, gosh, that's the way we should think about it, is pushing in, pulling out, pushing in, pulling out. So they really have that concept. LinkedIn is very much the same. What makes them different from all the other services out there is they got critical mass, and they became the place to represent yourself. I'm sure there are a million different sites that wanted to be that, but LinkedIn is the place that matters now. They have created the graph of who I know and who I've worked with in the past, and then essentially really owned identity. So when Yammer looked at this problem, they thought, no, don't do something kind of random there in that layer to connect things. You need to do a graph. You need to think about relationships. The Fast team came at this from a different perspective, very, very complementary, but a different perspective. And the Fast team looked at it and said, we're kind of responsible for reinventing the way people find people and information. We're search. How does this work on the internet? And if you really think about how it works on the internet, the most interesting thing is that it leverages the behavior of people to overlay essentially social behavior on top of an information graph, right? Like, why do you get, you know, if you go search for SharePoint today out through Google or Bing or whoever it happens to be, why do you get fairly relevant results? It's because other people have clicked those results, right? And that's the basis of the algorithm that works. There's lots of details, but that's the basis. They essentially are allowing each click to vote and each vote to count and for those votes to be tallied, for the little things to add up. And that was an interesting insight of like, gee, if you want to do search right, you kind of have to layer on the behavior of people to make it work. And at the same time that Yammer was thinking about an enterprise graph, the team in Oslo with FAST was thinking about this idea of overlaying social signals, and they came together and realized, man, this is a marriage made in heaven. So again, I won't go deep onto what the office graph is, but I will say that what we think about today then is this idea at its very basic level of kind of plotting the relationships between people and things. So I'm going to represent the people as circles and the X's as things. And there is this idea that you have a collection of people and things coming from all the different workloads, and that you can start to draw edges between them, and that these edges are based on relationships that you gather as people do their work. And that is really, really important. I'll give you some examples of signals that matter to us. My boss is a guy named John Case. He heads up all of the product management for Office. When John emails me, I email him back very quickly. That's what I do. I bet you do that with your boss too. If you don't, I'd recommend that you do that with your boss. That's maybe the only thing you'll get out of my session today. Remember that point. When a system sees that I respond to John's emails quickly and do so fairly consistently, it actually can start to infer, hey, there's a relationship of respect or importance there. Doesn't know yet what John thinks about me, but it certainly knows that I think I better respond quickly to John. It is those small types of clues and cues that the office graph can start to capture as edges. And the way that Adam Pisoni would talk about it is he'd say, look, you have to create an environment in which every person's action is social, because we define social as any act that can then be captured by the graph. So when you open a document, it's social because it's captured. When you close a document, when you share a document, when you edit a document, when you read a document, all those things start to become quote-unquote social because they add to the value of the graph. They start to really construct here the relationships between what's happening. And fundamentally, that is kind of what we are creating with this office graph concept, is a way to link those things together. Now, if we stop for a moment and talk about business strategy as in addition to product strategy, I just want to be clear on what we're trying to do. We're not trying to be sinister, we're trying to be actually very open. And what we're saying is, this whole idea of work like a network in the video is not marketing spiel. Well, there is some great marketing, by the way. Good job, team. Excellent marketing spiel, I feel like. But there's reality in what we're trying to do here. The network matters for LinkedIn. The network matters for Facebook. The network is going to matter, we think, for your company, because you have to be able to tap into these relationships to get things done. We're going to talk more about how that surfaces, but that's what we're trying to do. So you'll be able to get more information on the office graph, because we've got some deep dives. If you didn't go to the sessions, you'll be able to get access to the content. But that, in its essence, is what we're trying to accomplish. Now, I've had questions on, like, what are the details behind office graph? Is it real? You know, can you extend it? Let me be clear about a couple of strategic points. This thing is really important for us. In many ways, we think this thing is as important for us in order to change the world as the document format was 20 years ago. What I mean by that is it's something that we have to be able to help people to get usage from, and we have to be able to leverage the network effects of. Super, super important. We're really open with people. So will we let partners extend it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Will there be APIs? Yes, absolutely. Will there be ways to make sure that content that doesn't exist in Office 365 gets into the graph? Absolutely. Will we connect to other graphs if and when they exist? Absolutely. Our view here is we happen to be in a unique position because most people spend an inordinate amount of time either in their mail client in Outlook, we hope over time in other experiences, or in a client like, you know, Word, Excel, or PowerPoint. They spend a lot of time there. And we can capture signals then that help. If you hear Adam talk about it, one way I love to hear, he says, gosh, we had this awesome experiment with the enterprise graph, but our biggest problem was we had a very small subset of signals from people. We had to first kind of get down to the signals of people who chose to use Yammer, and then even then, we only captured certain things they were doing because they still were emailing and doing other things. And so he's very excited about expanding this out. So we look at this office graph concept and think, oh, there's a lot here. One more detail on this to give you a sense of the underlying technology. There are essentially two big pieces to it. Again, you can go deep. But there is a piece that is based on the FAST technology that goes out and indexes stuff. It is an indexing mechanism. It leverages everything that's good about FAST. And it can index stuff that is in Office 365 or anywhere else, internet services, on-prem, et cetera. So we feel great about that overall architecture. There's a second component to it, which is all about relationships. This kind of overlays the relationships, captures the signals. And that's kind of conceptually the Office Graph. There's a lot more to it in terms of caching and how we actually do it, but we're not going to get into the details today. It is very powerful. So number two, first we did people. And we think there's more to do here. We didn't announce a lot there. You should know that we're very focused. Number two, we did Office Graph. That was ready. This is real. It's working. It's running today. The thing that we did and announced, obviously, hopefully you caught it. If not, I'm going to tell it to you now. I hope you got this. Oslo, obviously. The way to think about Oslo, easiest way to think about it, it's a graph browser. It's a way for you to browse the graph. Is this the only way you're going to get value out of this graph? Nope. Is it the most valuable thing we could do around the graph? Probably nope, by the way, is what I would say. Is it very tangible? Yes. Here's how Oslo came about. The FAST team actually finished work on the graph months and months ago. Months and months and months ago. And they started trying to talk to everybody about it. And everybody was like, huh, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I can't even imagine what you're doing. And so they went back to Oslo and thought, we got to build something to help people understand how this could be useful. And they built a great app. Will this app be something that becomes a place that everybody lives in? We don't know. Will it be useful for a set of people? I can guarantee you it will be. But this may be the first time that you're hearing from technology companies the approach that Yammer has always espoused, which is, this is a grand experiment where we know there's value, but we don't know exactly what form it's going to take. And as we push into the future of work, you should know and recognize that we do not presume to know all of the answers here. We're going to do a lot of innovation, and there's going to be some stuff that sticks and some stuff that doesn't. So really excited about Oslo. Love what it has to do for us. You heard about some of the use cases. If you have questions, you can ask, but that's kind of how we frame that. The next thing we started to look at was experiences. And we realized, as Oslo shows, is that, boy, all of this is really good. You can have people, you can have the Office Graph, but what needs to happen here is you have to build experiences that are approachable for the end user. And so we've done a couple, and I will list out a couple. First one I'll talk about is groups. Now, I get various reactions from people on groups, everything from like, hey, you should have done this a long time ago, to like, wow, that's going to be a game changer. Let me quickly describe it and then tell you where we're headed with it. The idea here is that today, again, there are some great tools. You can have a group in Yammer. You can have a team site in SharePoint. You can have a mailbox, shared mailbox even, in Outlook. But they just don't meet or work together very well. As a person, you have to go from one to the next to the next to the next. And we do that fairly well, right? Very well, you know, compared to how it could work out. But it is cumbersome today. And we've made it more cumbersome as we've added new things like Yammer because the things don't get together. So the idea behind groups is very simple. At the end of the day, when we think of changing work, we think of a fundamental, not the only, but a fundamental kind of concept here is a set of people, let's call it a team, we'll call it a group, that works together. In almost every industry around the world, this fundamental group of people is how work gets done. So that's very interesting to us, and we wanted to allow you to do that. So a group is nothing more or less than one or more people with some of the great things that come from other things, like a mailbox and a calendar and a place to put files and a Yammer conversation. And over time, there will be meeting spaces, et cetera, et cetera. It is the idea that we can add these together. I don't think we quite have this totally right yet, by the way. We showed you an experience, if you go back to, felt somewhat bumpy to me. That's okay. This is, again, the new Microsoft starting to experiment with things. But we feel very strongly about the concept. This is a good concept. Now, we have spent a ton of time looking at groups and how the future of work is going to play out. And I want to give you just kind of two examples to give you some nuance into how this is working. I'm going to talk about, what should I choose? I'll first talk about the mailbox and Yammer, which is a very interesting one, this connection right here. We got a little ways into this, and we discovered a bit of a, let's say, a blocking issue. And that was if you had a group that had a mailbox, and you had a group that had a Yammer conversation, it started to become really confusing to people where the conversation was happening. Right? So people were sending email to the group, and some people used email. Other people were using Yammer, and they weren't seeing what was being discussed on email and vice versa. There was kind of a fundamental problem. Now, you might think that there would be a generational gap. We did do research on this, like who goes to Yammer and who goes to the email mailbox, right? And you'd think, yeah, you know what? It's all those over 40 white men who go to email, and like that's the way it all works. And everybody else, the new folks, under 30 set, they go to Yammer, which isn't totally true, it turns out. Think about the fast-growing demographic on Facebook, and it is not, you know, it's like 40-plus women out there who are using this. So there are people who are comfortable with social and who get it, and so it's kind of a mixed bag. We do think in the future, as more and more young people come into the workforce, they actually will choose social over email. A good social experience is going to feel much more comfortable to them than email. But that is, you know, that varies by person, etc. So when we looked at these things and did some research, we had a fundamental problem because we didn't know quite what to do. Here are some more things we learned when we dug deep into these. Email itself has a bunch of conventions around it that make it work. And those conventions have been built up over 20-plus years of being used in the workforce. You know what I mean. Anybody out there feel pressure when their email inbox starts to pile up and they haven't been able to respond for a while? I do. Everybody has their own number, right? My number actually tends to be about 30. If it gets more than 30, I'm just like this maniacal email guy. If it gets to be more than about 30, I really feel pressure. Man, somebody has something that's going on and I don't know what's going on. My wife, on the other hand, is about 6,000, right? It has to hit like many thousand before she feels pressure. I love my wife. That's why I like her. But everybody has their own thing. How fast you answer your email matters, right? So that also indicates importance. We talked about that with my boss. That is a convention that's been built up. The fact that you do or don't answer email matters as well. If you as my colleague send me an email and I just don't answer it, in many cultures, not every, but I'll take the Microsoft culture, that is an affront. Like, that's as much as me coming to your door and wanting to talk to you and you shutting the door. That doesn't work because email is assumed to be a protocol that guarantees delivery to the person. Otherwise, it tells you it didn't deliver, right? You've seen that thing before. You get this thing that says, oh, I couldn't deliver this. Sorry, it didn't work out. Like, we have this idea that it got to the person and they took an action. There's many more things I could tell you from the research. People have all sorts of conventions around email. And if you go mess with those conventions, guess what happens? They get really grumpy, like really grumpy. And they tell you, no, I don't want you messing with email. I don't love it, but if you start messing with email, I get really confused. For instance, we have this idea of open and transparent. What if we just made it so that emails, or some emails by default, went to all company? Like many people could read them. Or what if we made it so that they were like discoverable? As you can imagine, users go berserk, right? Because they send emails during meetings that's like, hey, I don't like the way Jennifer's talking to me right now. Can you bump her or something? They don't want anybody to read some of these messages about what's going on because they know the convention. I send to you, you see it. Nobody else sees it. They understand these types of things, and like this is what we start to bump into when it came to email. We also recognize that there are going to be some people never leave email. They're going to go their entire working lives, no matter what we try and do, they're not going to leave it. And we get that. So we're not confused about that. Now, if we go over to Yammer, there are so many good things about this new way of working together. You know, over the last couple of quarters, I've really tried to immerse myself in Yammer. I have a team down in San Francisco who doesn't use email. They don't send me emails unless they decide, okay, Jared's really got to look at this one. But they generally don't send emails. And this is a different way of approaching things. But the conventions around social are still developing. If I send you a message on Yammer, do you have to reply? Most people, based on the research, would say no. Most people would say, social's a little bit different. You kind of sent it to me, and I don't know. Yeah, maybe I reply, maybe I don't. Other people would say, gosh, the stuff goes by me so quickly that I can't keep up in social, so I use social more as a way to kind of figure out what's going on. So there are other things here. Now, is there a benefit to working in Yammer, my team? It's awesome, I have to tell you. When I work with the team down in San Francisco and I've tried to get all of my team to do this, I am much better informed about what my 130-odd people who are focused on certain things are doing. Like, I know what's going on. I may not respond to everything, but I know like I've never known. Like, it is really, really useful. But will everyone go there? No, it's really hard. It's hard to get them there. And is it scary to some? Yes, because they don't know what happens. I have to admit, when I first started using Yammer, I couldn't tell what would happen when I sent a message. Who would be able to see this? Who couldn't see it? Can I delete it? Can I retract it? What happens? There's a lot of unknowns about social, and we get that. So we bumped into a bunch of things. That's a long way of saying, gosh, we realized there was an issue here. And in the group, just as a very specific, to show you how deep we've gone on some of these things, what we've realized is we only want there to be one conversation. So in a group, you can have a mailbox or a Yammer feed or both, and when you have both, they actually link together. That's what you saw in the demo the other day, is they mirror each other. You send an email to the mailbox, it is going to go over to the Yammer feed. You post on the Yammer feed, it's going to be in the email inbox. We spent I can't tell you how much time we spent looking at those details and how it was going to work. It's one example of the depth to which we're going to try and make sure we get this right. Let me tell you one other thing about the business model here. We have worked a long time on trying to figure out how do we get people to go to Yammer. And I feel like I understand some of those dynamics. The biggest, single, most important thing I think we can do will be this integration into Outlook, because it will essentially pull people there in a very pleasing way. Meaning, you're going to be able to work in a group totally the way that you like to in terms of conversations just by using your email, just like you saw from Julia the other day. If you never want to leave Outlook, you don't have to. But what I have found is when you have a group that has a Yammer conversation and an email view into that, you start to feel pulled into that new world. And when you get to that new world, you discover, wow, there's some good stuff here. This isn't so bad. And you start to become accustomed to the conventions. And you start to realize there's real benefit. And just like back in the days when IM came for the first time and people didn't know what to do with IM and email, we believe there's going to be a settling down of conventions that's going to happen here. So what you see us doing, and what we didn't have time to do on a big stage, you know, in front of 10,000 people, is to say, we believe we're with you on a journey to transform the way people work, but you have to start where people are. Anybody here remember Google Wave? Anyone? Too far, too fast. Too far, too fast. It may exactly be where we get to, but they had taken too many steps. It was like my old elementary teachers, like you got to show your work, right, when you're doing your math problem, because people can't follow you. And what we're realizing is there are hundreds of millions of people who are very comfortable with email and working that way. That's awesome. We love it. We have to help them get to the new way, and we have to be really smart about it. So we're trying to be intelligent. We're not going to get it right every time, I guarantee you. But we are trying to do things that actually help people to change the way they're working, and we're really excited about that. When I look at what else we're doing, I want to show one other thing in terms of experiences. Sometimes I refer to this as inline experiences. I do that in a blog post that I did this week. But I'll just do kind of Yammer plus docs. And I want to use this as a general use case for a moment. I hoped you liked the idea. And the concept here is we are shipping anytime there's a document in this system as it's represented. There was that little pane that Julia showed that you like click and out comes the little Yammer feed associated with it. The whole idea for us is we believe that any object in the system should be enabled to have a conversation about it and around it. We think that's really, really powerful. We don't think it's the best idea to have an email conversation about that, because those things go in many directions. We spend a lot of time on email. Email is very different from social because email is expected to be very, very transactional. And you can take an email and fork. People now know what forking email means. I have a big old distribution list. I can take it and just send it to someone else. It's taken the message. You actually cannot do that with a social thread. I don't know if you kind of got that, but you can't. A social thread is one thing. It's a single addressable thing. You add someone to the thread, they see the whole shebang. You can't cut off a part of the social thread and share it. That's just not the way it works. And so when we think about the types of conversations we want to have in the future, they are more like what you see in Yammer. We still want to evolve them, but more like that than what you see in email, which is very transactional. So we've created this experience where you go to a document, you push something, the conversation comes out, you can have conversations about that. That is incredibly powerful when you think of being able to get those notifications anywhere and anytime. In the future, we believe that you should be able to subscribe to those types of things. You could get them as texts, you could get them as instant messages. Like, you tell us what's important to you, because we don't think that we need to be confined to one way of doing this. But having that, we think, is super important. If you take a graph and you think about each of the objects in that graph back here, and you say, hey, each of these objects has associated with it conversations. The one thing we're clear we're not going to do is we're not going to put a conversation around a person, though, by the way. Be clear about that. That's not going to end well, I don't think, in most organizations. You don't want to be able to comment on Jared or something like that. But everything else in an organization, being able to documents, business objects, you know, all sorts of different things, commenting on them, we think is really important. And again, displays a lot of information. It allows us to, at that point, to like it, to share it, to post additional things related to it, etc. And that is, this idea for us is a pattern that is going to become important, where the pattern is essentially, and I'll write it this way, conversations plus gestures, where we'll be bringing this idea of working in a different way to the entire suite, but we'll do so by adding conversations and gestures. Gestures are the likes, the posts, the shares, that type of thing. Tons of information that we can get from all of this. So first we're doing people, then we're doing the office graph, then we're doing experiences. Let me tell you one last thing about kind of how things are shifting. And then I think, at that point, I think we'll open up to Q&A. So start thinking if you have questions. One last thing that we found is that if we're trying to work like a network, something that the world had not yet solved was the two different work modes, I will call them right now, that we see people using in this networked world. The first mode I'm going to call triage. Triage is probably best described by what you do in your inbox, if you're efficient as an inbox manager. You go into it, and then, you know, you have your rules, I have mine, we have our approaches, but your job there is like to bang stuff out. You're just like, Tony sent me a thing, Janet sent me a thing, you know, is this important? I delete that one, I don't care. You just are going through your list of things to do. One of the most annoying things about that, by the way, is because the inbox has become a frictionless way for people to communicate with us, it also has become a frictionless way for them to give us stuff to do. And we hate that. I hate that, you know? Like, the last thing I needed was another place for people to give me stuff to do. The inbox is a wonderful way to do that. And in many ways, when I work through my inbox and I tell this to my team, I'm not doing real work, at least not the work I want to do. I'm doing the work everybody else has forced upon me then. I hate it, right? Like, you get to send me something, and the convention is that I got to do it. I got to, like, respond to it. Otherwise, I'm, like, in some way insulting you. And so sometimes I choose to insult, just like you do. And other times I'm trying to respond. So this idea of triage is really valuable because it's really, really useful, but it's run amok now is the way it feels. Like it's you're doing other people's stuff instead of the stuff you want to do. The other end of the spectrum is what we'll call discovery. This gets back to what we discovered in the research, very deep research and our own experience with social. This is a place where people don't think mostly they need to triage, right? The social feed comes and goes. It's like a river. Never the same, you know, on any particular moment. It changes, and I can't keep up with it. In fact, in many places, there isn't a good way to do triage on a social network. And Yammer, before they were acquired, actually created an inbox, literally an inbox, meant to try and introduce the idea of triage to a social environment. But it's tough, I have to tell you. If you've used it, it's tough. It's a new convention. When does something go in my inbox versus my news feed? And how do I think about responding to it? And so there's a lot happening there. Stop for a moment and think about those two modes. We think they are incredibly important. You have to get your work done and triage. You have to. But at the same time, if you want to work like a network, you have to be able to discover stuff. That has to work too. But you don't spend most of your time discovering. You probably very rarely will go to an Oslo app discovering unless you're very disciplined and decide, hey, 30 minutes every morning is my Oslo time or something. We don't think that's going to happen to most. But yet the value of a network comes a lot from that discovery. So we're doing two things here. Number one, we're experimenting with discovery. And so you're going to see a lot, you know, Oslo is an experiment. You're going to see a lot more from us in terms of experimenting. Lots of stuff. Number two, we're creating inline experiences to aid discovery. So you'll start to see things happening within each of these experiences that will take what we know from the graph and say, hey, here's some information that might be useful to you. This would include when you set up a meeting saying like, hey, you've been having a meeting like this, it looks like you forgot Jen on the invite. You want to invite, it's not going to invite her, but it's just going to say, nobody else sees that, just you see that, but that could be very useful inline. It also has the ability, for instance, to say, hey, you have a meeting coming up tomorrow. It turns out that someone has uploaded three decks related to this meeting, and I've scanned, and it says they want you to read this before. In prep for the meeting, here's all the things we think you need. That is a scenario that we're super jazzed about. And we can do that with the Office Graph today. Not at all far-fetched. And so lots of great stuff to do. But this is a place that you're going to see more from us as we think about working in the future, balancing triage and discovery. Very, very important. Doing that in the context of accepted conventions and user experiences, very, very important. So when I get jazzed about where we're going, I think, man, the things we announced this week are so fundamentally important because they set the stage for us being able to change how people work. Now, before I get to the final questions, now you kind of see a view of, you know, 1, 2, and 3, people, graph, experiences. That's one way to think about it. There are many different cuts that you can use. I'll say one more thing, which is this is only the product enablement part of what we're doing. Again, we are very ambitious. Like, if you don't feel that energy from me and from others, I hope you do. We want to change the way people work. When I talk to, you know, people and they say, hey, what do you do in the office? I say, man, I know Office as a bunch of apps, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, maybe Outlook. Most of those apps are about me sitting alone and hammering stuff out and about throwing them over the wall, probably through email, to get somebody else to do something. That's the way Office is thought of today. In the future, next 2+ years, I want the world to think about Office not as those apps, but as the place and the way work gets done. Literally, the way it gets done. As my kids come into the workforce in a couple of years, I have teenagers now, I want them to think, wow, yeah, Office is just the way work gets done. It's super valuable because it's how I connect with other people. So we are on a journey to transform things. There are a bunch of things that make us different, but the idea that we know we're on a journey, I think, is probably one of the biggest differentiators. And I'll end on 2 pieces here. Number one, when you saw our approach to this idea of the mailbox and Yammer, we are thinking incredibly hard about how we help users take that journey. We recognize that we've got to win on the user level and we want to partner with you. So yesterday on the stage when I'm like, we want to partner with you, we're so excited. I really mean that. Like, we want to partner with you because we're not going to get it right every time. The second piece comes back to what I mentioned in the beginning. Your orgs are going to have to change the way they do work. Now, that isn't me forcing that on you. You're going to find it, I promise. We have felt it in our industry. Why is Microsoft different now? Why is Satya Nadella saying, hey, this is my 3-point plan, and here's why I'm excited? It's not because one day we woke up and just thought, oh, it'd be nice to do that. It's because our industry got so competitive, and people moved ahead of us so quickly that we realized it was change or die. And that, if that has not happened in your industry yet, I guarantee it will. So there's going to be tremendous pressure from folks to think about how do we go and do this. So we're not only committed on the technology side to do this, but a very different Microsoft you're going to find us committed to helping your organization do this. And so there are folks on my team working on how do you adopt this stuff? What are the patterns? I'm not here to talk about that today, but there are some sessions on it, and then we'll have a lot more that's available through the web and through this organization to talk you through that. So that's an important part of how we think about it. All right, that's the end of kind of what I was thinking to present. That took a while. You guys are very patient. I'd be happy to answer any questions about this stuff or about you know, anything else that you'd like to ask. I'm happy to answer about where we're taking anything. So, yes, sir. So the question is, have we given any thought to audio in this environment, and how do we think about that? No, it absolutely is really important to us. When we think about the stuff that Link represents broadly, we're going to start from presence, and we're going to move up to instant messaging, then to voice, and then to video. And all of those are important signals. You actually didn't see us emphasize those here today because we're working with the Link team. We just didn't have anything to announce on it right now. And we think that's very, very important. We also think that, again, linking out to things and systems that are beyond what would be in Office 365 is important in that scenario as well. There's great technology out there. I mean, it's not perfect. My wife and I love to, like, you know, use that voice recognition stuff, and it just sends some crazy stuff to each other sometimes. So it's not perfect, you know that. But there's, you know, there's good signals that can come from that. Yeah, this is tough to do to 10,000 people, I'll tell you. But thank you.
You said that Oslo is not the most important application of Office Graph. Do you have an idea for what it is or what the character picks up?
I should clarify in what I mean by that. So he said, hey, you said that Oslo is not the most important application for Office Graph. Do you have a sense for what that will be? I would say two things. Number one, I think the place that this is going to be most useful over the next 3 years will be inline experiences, where we surface stuff that the graph knows at the point of you needing it, right when you're about ready to email or finish or start a document or any of those types of things. There is some awesome stuff we didn't show you today that already works there, that we can literally, as you're writing a document, say, oh, you want that snippet from here, or you want to know what that document looks like? It would blow your minds. Like, I won't do that right now, but we're going to be very forthcoming, and you're going to see a lot of stuff from us. But those inline experiences, I think, are going to be really powerful. Then I'll go to Oslo itself. What you've seen from Oslo itself was like the what we would call the MVP, the minimum viable product, for us to show you. We needed to show you something that was like, oh, I get that. You know, I get it. But there's a lot more there that we feel like we need to do. Now, will Oslo evolve into a dashboard where you kind of start your day because it summarizes the most important emails, the most important conversations, the most important documents? Possibly. Don't know. That's the type of experimentation that we're going to do. Can it do things like I told you, like say, hey, you have a meeting coming up. Here's everything I know about how you could prep for that meeting. Absolutely. Like, that can be done today. The things that you can do with it are amazing. You know, the first time that you don't have to ask somebody to send you a PowerPoint because you go to things presented to me and you realize that the system knew you were in a meeting with Joe, knew that Joe, like, I'm serious, literally clicked, what is it, F5 that does PowerPoint project? Is that literally clicked F5 and that you were there and he was there, and then it says, oh, this was presented to you. When you realize it's done that for the first time because we have it running, you're just like blown away. You're like, wow, that was amazing. You don't feel badly about it. There's nothing weird going on there. You're just like, that was amazing. The other day I had something with Adam where he and I had been working on a strategy document. He had shared it with me probably about 2 months ago and then said, I'm going to go work on it. And I totally ignored it from there. He and I kept talking, but I totally ignored it. One day I opened up Oslo and it came up as literally one of the first three things that Oslo presented to me. And the reason was he had been on a roadshow, shown it to a lot of people. They had opened it and it was now trending as one of the hottest things around me. And I went back and read it before a meeting with him. And I sat down and said, hey, I read your document. He said, what? How'd you? And I said, yeah, Oslo showed it to me. He was like, great, let's have a good conversation. What didn't you like? That first time for me is just like, wow, that is amazing. So you're seeing an MVP. I think it can be more. The inline experiences will absolutely be valuable, but there's probably more to do. I worry about Google Wave as the predecessor because I don't want to go too far too fast. Nor do I believe that I can get everyone to move out of Outlook to some new amazing thing. So we are very pragmatic about that. You know, I think you should be too. And you should be of, you know, whether it's me or any other vendor, anybody who tells you, like, I'm going to change the world, you know, you better be asking, do they understand how the world really works today? So, all right. Other questions? Yes. Yes.
I saw nice things yesterday in the keynote that you can now put documents directly to OneDrive and then show them in Yammer.
Correct.
Is there also something like storing documents directly in TeamSite, in the document library in TeamSite, or other stuff like announcements in Yammer and announcements in SharePoint? Can you give any courtesy thing?
Yes, I will try to answer that. So the question essentially, if I could boil it down, is like, the connections between Yammer and SharePoint, and how do you think about those, particularly when it comes to documents and managing them? What I would say is do not be confused. The place where you manage content and manage it well is SharePoint. That's what it's called. We've done that for decades. We think that's great. There are lots of problems with SharePoint, but managing content is not a place where we feel like we totally like whiffed or something. You know, it works well. So when you upload documents currently to, depends on where we are in flighting, but if you upload documents into Yammer, it actually is going into SharePoint. You don't know it. And over time, we will expose that up to you. The little bit of a backstory of what's going on here is what we imagine this. One of the first projects we did was to do that. Okay, great. Let's have the back end for documents of Yammer be SharePoint. Sweet. Go away and do that little puppy. And then all of a sudden, we realize, like, where are those documents? Like, where did they get stored? Like in some, I don't know, some SharePoint place someplace? Like where are those things? So we actually, that was part of us starting to think about, yeah, that's weird, the groups concept of like, yeah, you need to be able to unify across these workloads, you know, everything from files to conversations to otherwise. So there's a lot of thinking that went on there. But getting back to the SharePoint integration, a couple of different other ways. You saw the integration of being able to have Yammer conversations on any type of thing. You saw that in the video portal. You could have it around videos. You can have it around documents. We also will be integrating the gestures I talked about, the ability to like, to share, et cetera, all of that type of stuff you'll see. So all the types of things that you would assume would be there. The thing that I note is in my post yesterday, I don't know if anybody's read it, but in the post yesterday, what I said is most people assume that our social strategy was going to be like the top 3 to 5 of those things, like embed SharePoint feeds better, or sorry, Yammer feeds better in the SharePoint. And what happened is when we did that, just like I said with groups, we realized, we got to think bigger than that. And that's what you're seeing here. And that's what I like about what we've done, is we are absolutely doing things like comments and all of that, and embedding and gestures, bet your bottom dollar. But we're also doing so much more. That's why I wanted to have this session, just tell you more about that. Yes, sir.
A couple of questions. One is, how do you see some of these pieces, do you see them dripping out over time, or kind of big milestone releases? And the second piece is, how, as a partner, I'm thinking about, how do we hook into the graph to create line of business solutions that leverage the graph? Is that part of
it? It is, yeah. It is. I'll answer that second, though. First question is, how do you see this all playing out, timing, all of that? Second is, how do you think about partner opportunities for the graph? I'll tackle the first one. I had a great question on that today in the first one, and someone asked me, like, do you think you'll miss the, like, every 2 to 3 year big launch where there was so much there that you could say, ta-da, here we go? And I had to think about it for a moment and think, yeah, how is this being rolled out? Let me tell you how it's being rolled out and then my reaction to that question. This is going to come out progressively, iteratively, with pieces landing before other pieces. I'll give you a very specific example. The Exchange and Outlook groups that you saw in Julia's demo will hit mid-year-ish this year is what we're looking at. Let's say from June on, give a little bit of a 3-month window in there. The Yammer components of groups will not have hit yet. So I'll introduce the full groups concept, but not every component of that will be done, including Yammer and Link. Yammer will come a little bit later in the year. That's the way it's going to be. We're going to roll out stuff as quickly as we can. We're going to be looking very carefully at MVPs, you know, what is viable enough that users will get it so it doesn't totally confuse them. We do careful research. Doesn't mean we're always right, but we go down with people, show them something, say, use this to get it done. And if they're totally confused, we think, uh-oh, we're not done yet. We also have a couple of programs some of you are involved in to test things out. That's true of Oslo. That's true of, you know, groups. It's true of every little piece. Now, answering the question that the other person asked me, what I think our disclosure strategy is going to end up evolving into is as follows. Well, there's a piece I know and there's a piece I think. The piece I know is you're going to see us become much more transparent. What I mean by that is we do not think that secrets are the way that we're going to win this game any longer. That was true previously. We'd hold it back, we wouldn't tell you, and then, ta-da, we'd have this great event in San Francisco or New York and tell you. We think that execution is the way to win here. So we're going to tell you lots of stuff that we're doing, and then we're going to go away and try and execute on it. That's a very different approach than we've ever had. And then number two, I think what these reveals like this week has been is we're going to make sense of it all for you. There's lots of stuff related to groups that's been coming for several months, but it was tough for you to figure out what we were doing, which is okay. You could get value with some of those things already. I think there are going to come certain times every year where we say, time out. Now's my opportunity to tell you how it all fits together, what has been delivered and what will be delivered. And that's very much what you see from us this conference. Interesting fact, this is the first conference at which we have ever shown, you know, we would say show so much leg, ever showed you stuff that was future. We never talked about anything unless it had shipped or was about ready to ship within the next 30 days. That was our bar for the SharePoint conference up to this conference. I just showed you stuff that won't be here for quarters still. So a very different approach. Second question on Office Graph, really, really important for us to create that partner opportunity. There was a time when Office 365, we thought, was going to be a direct play. We have been disabused of that notion. You know, for us to win, it is all about partners. No, we don't need that. All about partners. We're very clear on that. So I believe at some of the sessions, they talked about the APIs that will be available for Oslo. I think so. I saw some of the earlier early slide builds. I think that's right. But we didn't make a huge deal of it this time because I tried to push the team of, like, what are the things you have to get out there? We've gotten some feedback of, like, hey, you should have stressed that a little bit more, and don't be confused. We think that's an excellent opportunity. We don't know exactly what those opportunities are going to look like, but we do think there are a lot of opportunities. Over here. Let's start with the gentleman in front of the red guy and then the red guy. Yes. 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 So the question is, how does Dynamics fit into this? And how, you know, there's data, and how should we think about that? I would say there are two ways that Dynamics fits in. The first way is a very straightforward way of a lot of the concepts that we're introducing here, like groups, like the underlying conversation layer that Yammer becomes, you know, all of these types of things, the office graph. We're carrying those concepts into Dynamics over time. The first step you saw us do was to integrate Yammer as the, you know, the conversation substrate, if you will. So that's integrated into Dynamics CRM today. We'll continue to do those things. And that will be true for groups. Over time, it'll be true for the office graph. The fact that the office graph is based on some indexing is awesome because that makes it makes it easier. We don't have to build these like super duper connectors. We just have to work on indexing. The second place that I'll talk about Dynamics being interesting, though, is this idea of listen. They have, well, the two ends of the spectrum. Maybe remember there's like listen, adapt, and then grow. And really, you could think of that as listen, adapt, and execute. I think Dynamics becomes awesome on the two ends. Listening, they've got some great social listening capabilities. They bought it in the form of what they called NetBreeze, just reintroduced it right prior to convergence in what they're calling Dynamics social listening now. We think that there's a great way for them to listen outside as they want to and listen inside, some really good stuff there. And then on the other side, they're working on execution where they have some great assets with marketing that allow you to go back out and do email campaigns, et cetera, to engage with customers, so both sides. The middle part would be where we would look at data and indexing their data and bringing it into Office Graph. So part of the charter here, unlike ever before, is for us to go from Dynamics all the way to, you know, all the other assets. Yes, sir. Yeah, great question. So the question is governance for Yammer and for conversation generally. You know, who can create a group? How do you think about, I would add kind of compliance and discovery underneath it, all that type of stuff. We haven't worked all of that out. What I can tell you is the first couple iterations are going to feel, they're going to be biased towards this idea of anybody can create a group. I will tell you, like, Yammer is very much a, like, anybody can go and do it. Over time, I'm sure we'll get feedback from you of, like, I want more, I want moderation, I want this, I want that. It does allow me, as we finish up here, to tell you a little bit about our philosophy there. We will optimize first for the end user experience to prove value to an end user and then build IT controls. I've joked with a couple teams that sometimes we used to, in the old world, we used to build the switch that turned a feature off before we built the feature. Because you guys were so loud, you know, like that's what you do. We're not doing that now. And so there will be some things that might make you a little bit uncomfortable there. But we're not trying to create chaos by any stretch. It's just that if we don't deliver value to end users, no matter how much you like it, if you happen to be an IT pro or like a TDM or what we'd call kind of a business IT oriented person, even if you love it, we have to have people in the business feel like I want that thing. It helps me get my work done. So, yeah, in the back. Love it. Question is, what about knowledge network, expertise, kind of LinkedIn, all that type of stuff? You should just be super clear that that is low-hanging fruit for us. And that, again, the way you should think about what I presented today is hopefully it gave you some color on what we're doing. We did not present everything we could have announced. So there's a lot of work going on. You can imagine that kind of office graph is an awesome, if we get that right with people's profiles, it's an awesome way to be able to do all sorts of HR things. So great stuff there, but nothing to announce right now. Yep. Get to you in just a sec. Yep.
I can imagine that with the Office Graph, you also can analyze individual performance, behavior, and influence.
It's true. Question is, I can imagine with Office Graph, you also can analyze individual performance, behavior, effectiveness, value. A little scary. Our focus for the first little while here on Office Graph is end user centric. So we're going to be very focused on what value are we delivering to the end user. We do anticipate that people are going to want to look at their graphs broadly and say, what's going on? I'll give you an example that a couple of companies have done from Yammer that I find interesting. There are these, you can go do network analysis on Yammer today. We have APIs for it. Some companies do it. We have done it at Microsoft. And what you find is what you would call supernodes. These are people who are very connected, not in spirit, but by the work that they do with lots of people. And there is a body of work that indicates when you have a supernode leave, it really has a drag on productivity in your environment. Like, it really matters. And so some companies have actually taken Yammer and analyzed that and identified supernodes and done special things for those people. Like, hey, did you know you're important? We know you're important. You should go and do things. We love that scenario. It will not be the first thing that we work on. I imagine partners will be very interested. This is a place that we think we have to be thoughtful about what we're doing. You know, that and the e-discovery, and you can imagine, some people have asked me, do you think that Office Graph could tell you when you have bad actors in the company doing stuff you don't want them to do? Absolutely. Absolutely. You can pattern match on this thing, for sure. Do you think we need to be careful as Microsoft in how we help you use that? Absolutely. You know, we are moving into a new era here. There's a lot we love about the network in our consumer lives. There's stuff that makes us worried about privacy. It's one of the biggest public issues in any country today. That will be true in work just as it is in our consumer lives. So again, we are not confused. This is one of the things we think makes us very different from other vendors out there, is like, this is important to us. We realize we're pushing the limit. So that's how we think about that. There were some over here. I'll start with blue and then red, please.
So I want to switch to the business side.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So is there a site that's going to be geared for that? That's really kind of new.
Yes. So let me boil the question down of like, hey, lots of great thoughts here, but is there going to be a place to go or guidance you give us or help to help us transform our orgs? If you tell us half of this is a people/organizational battle, where are we going? This is a place that we haven't done well yet. Certainly historically we haven't done well. On my team, we haven't done well either. If you were to look on my to-do list, I literally have thought leadership as a thing that is red right now because I feel like we don't have it. We have some great resources to help us do that. We, you know, literally have a bunch of these customer success managers I think can help, and it's something I'd like to tackle next is where I'm going with it. So, you know, if I set your expectations, I think it's going to take a couple of quarters for us to spin it up. But yes, that is absolutely something that we want to do. It's an interesting thing. How many people have heard Adam Pisoni present? Okay, so a fair number, decent number. Adam is probably one of our best here to talk about this. There are very few other people at Microsoft who do it as well, and so this is a new muscle for us. But it is more than on our radar. It's on our priority list. And then in the red, please. Great question. Will Office Graph be available for on-prem? And the clear answer to that is no way. Nope. But let me tell you a little bit more about that. To do this is hard. Like, let's not even talk about storage or anything. The amount of electricity you have to have. This is really hard work. We do indexing of lots of stuff. We have a very interesting approach to kind of inferences. There's, whether it is storage or compute power, et cetera, we actually cannot. I don't think it's feasible for me to tell you, oh, you want Office Graph? Awesome. Please go set up about 1,000 servers. And then load this on there, and then I'm going to give you updates, you know, every, let's say, 3 weeks or so on how you should run it. It just isn't feasible for us. So maybe we'll figure out some way to do pieces of it, but I'll tell the audience right now, I do not expect us to do the power of what you saw with the Office Graph on-prem. I do expect us to be able to take the Office Graph and go and index and incorporate data from on-prem. That is plan. People are working on that right now. Again, we didn't announce everything we have to say, but we've got stuff going on that. So we recognize that this hybrid state is super important, but we're starting to get to cases where, and this is what I love about it, like, we talked about the cloud as if it were some like amazing thing, but we couldn't tell you previously why it would be better, except for maybe it's cheaper or something. This is the beginning of me starting to say, like, no, here's a scenario you just are going to have a hard time running. So it's pretty exciting. Let me stop there. I'm happy to answer questions if you want to come up. Let me say this. I hope you're just really thrilled by this. If you weren't, I hope you walked out. So I don't know who I'm talking to then. There is really good stuff coming. Thank you. And I would just finish by saying you should stay tuned. There's more coming from here. We've got some great minds thinking. It's just a pleasure to be working on this with you and looking forward to seeing you at other events. Thanks.